48 degrees tomorrow after 74 today, so only here in West Texas, what can I say?
It's good to have variety in our life, Jim.
Yes, it is. I guess so. That's Dr. Ben Edwards, our good friend, of course, the Dr. Edwards Show this morning. Sitting in for Wade, he is in Las Vegas. I'm all sure right. He's working, Doctor.
Well, it's good to have someone working in Vegas, I guess.
I guess so.
Can report back to us.
We have a guest this morning, and we don't want to delay that. I'll let you introduce him, and we'll get him on air.
I'm extremely excited to have a guest today on the show, Mr. Gabe Brown. He is the author of a book called Dirt to Soil, One Family's Journey into Regenerative Agriculture. And yes, we're a doctor show. The show's called You're the Cure. And the reason we say You're the Cure is because we do believe God designed the body to heal itself if you simply give it the inputs that the one who created this body intended the body to have. And avoid the inputs that he never intended to have, then the body just runs like it's supposed to. So, and with that philosophy, we rely on food, obviously. Let thy food be thy medicine, and thy medicine be thy food, is what Hippocrates said, and we actually believe that, and we try to implement that in the way we practice. However, that requires the food to have nutrition in it and be nutrient-dense food. So we are very much married to the agricultural system. Most doctors aren't, but we are. So we're quite interested when we come across someone like Mr. Gabe Brown, who it's so intriguing reading his book, Dirt to Soil, so many correlations between Gabe's life and his journey from conventional ag into regenerative ag, and my journey from conventional medicine into regenerative medicine. So fascinating correlations, and I wanted to have Gabe on, partly because we live in the middle of agriculture central here, West Texas, and we've got the ag guy, Jim Stewart, with us today, so it's perfect synergy here.
You know, perfect timing. Let me tell everybody, the phone line is open this morning, 806-745-5800, it's 806-745-5800, or you can text 806-745-5800, so we'd love to hear from you. And the phone lines are open.
Yes, we would. And I think hopefully a lot of farmers out there will be listening today, and maybe we'll have to have Gabe back in the future too. But a few things that kind of whet people's appetite here that hopefully we'll get to later in the show. One part of the book, Gabe talks about free nitrogen. I know everybody likes free stuff, and there's always the cost of doing ag, especially conventional ag today, is so high. But in part of the book, he talks about how there's 32,000 tons of nitrogen in the air right above your acre of land. How can we grab that nitrogen for free and put it right down into your soil without having to add synthetic nitrogen through buying it from a fertilizer dealer? But another one that caught my attention was water infiltration rates. Gabe Brown's ranch and farm up in North Dakota had an infiltration rate of a half inch per hour, and it improved to 2 inches in 25 seconds. In part of the book, he talks about a 13-inch rainfall in a day, and the next day able to drive a vehicle over it without making ruts in it because the water infiltrated so much. So it's not so much how much rainfall do we get here in West Texas, it's how much that rainwater can infiltrate the soil and stay in the soil, versus the opposite of that would be create your own drought. You might get 3 inches of rain, but if you can't infiltrate into the soil, then you're still in the drought, actually, even though you had the rain. But the part that really got my attention, and we're going to dive right into here in a sec, is Gabe talks about the United States has the worst health outcomes, and I've mentioned that many a time. We've gone through those statistics, and spends the most money on healthcare. But the government also supports a cheap food system as opposed to a nutrient-dense food system. We're looking for cheap food instead of nutrient-dense food. And there are lots of unintended consequences to the land when you live under that philosophy of cheap food. There's unintended consequences to our body in healthcare when you live under that philosophy too, instead of a nutrient-dense food. So anyways, just a little bit of an intro there. Gabe Brown, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Dr. Edwards. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
Well, I always like to start with our guest, basically a little brief. You tell your story of how you got into this, and I was just sharing your story with a friend of mine out before the show, that you were kind of like me. You weren't looking for regenerative agriculture, holistic land management. You didn't even know that existed, just as I didn't even know there was integrative functional medicine, holistic, alternative, whatever you want to call it. I wasn't looking for it. The Lord just opened this door and pushed me through it. So let's start there. I think people would be fascinated with how you were kind of just a regular old farmer buying into your father-in-law's place, and you kind of got pushed into this by God, you say in the book. So share with the listeners that story, if you don't mind.
Sure. So my in-laws founded the operation in 1956, and they farmed it under the current conventional type mindset with heavy tillage and synthetics and herbicides and chemicals. And I joined the operation with them in the mid-1980s, and then in 1991, my wife and I had the opportunity to buy part of that operation from them. And I farmed conventionally, you know, the same practices I had learned from my father-in-law. Then in 1994, I had the opportunity to learn a bit about no-till, and seeing as how I was not from a farm or ranch, I didn't have any of those preconceived notions as to why we should till. I always remember my father-in-law in the spring of the year, he'd say, well, now we're trying to till the soil in order to dry it out so we can get in and seed. But then come July, we were praying for a rain. That didn't make much sense to me. So in 1993, going into the spring of 1994, I bought a no-till drill. But in order for me to afford that, I had to sell all my tillage equipment. And that was really a good thing because then I was all in. I couldn't go back. Well, then I tell people the years 1995 through 1998, I went through a series of 4 years of natural disasters. In 1995, we lost 100% of our crop to hail. 1996, we lost 100% of it to hail again. 1997, we dried out. It was a major drought in the northern plains, and we never combined an acre. Then in 1998, God blessed me with another year of hail, and we lost 80% of our crop to hail again. And I tell people those were four very difficult years to live through and operate through, but they were absolutely the best thing that could have happened to my family and I, because it sent us on a path of learning how do we get our farm and ranch to a state where we can have profitable production without all these added inputs. Because as you can imagine, after 4 years of no crop, the bank wasn't willing to loan me any money. So I had to learn, how am I going to do this on my own? And so I tell people, and I explain in the book, that it's been a 25-plus year journey as to how do I take dirt and convert it into soil, and healthy soil that we can grow nutrient-dense foods while making a living.
Right. Well, those 4 years of natural disasters, and I think you mentioned in the book that you didn't buy hail insurance because your father-in-law in the 35, I think, previous years only had one or two hails that only took out a little bit, not even the significant portion of the crop. So to have that 3 out of 4 years was pretty God-ordained, I would say.
No, there's no risk in farming, though.
Right.
Right. And I tell people the ironic thing, and the way, one of the ways I knew God was trying to tell me something was that of all the neighbors surrounding me, I was the only one who lost crops all 4 years. One other person lost crops 3 years, and several lost 2 years of crops. But I was the only one who had it all four. And so that, to me, I took that as a sign and a challenge. And right. And it, like I said, it was the best thing that could have happened to us.
Well, explain the difference between sustainable ag versus regenerative ag, because in one part of the book you talk about how you were trying to sustain the operation in a poor state of health, and again, this correlates so much to chronic disease management versus fix it. So you were trying to sustain the operation in a poor state of health, not help it recover and improve. And you say, I know sustainability is a popular buzzword, and everyone wants to be sustainable, but why in the world would we want to sustain a degraded resource? And then you go on to list the symptoms of a degraded resource, include poor infiltration, water infiltration, poor fertility, compaction, weeds, low yields, high input costs, salinity, plant diseases, invasive pests, erosion, declining profits, and the list goes on and on. And when I was reading through those symptoms, I thought, man, That's what I hear from my patients all the time that are farmers. I mean, I have so many farmers come in stressed, and we get to talking and just driving around looking at the resource, the dirt around. Those symptoms that you just listed really apply. So why would you want to sustain that when all you say the cause of all these symptoms was the same? Poor ecosystem function. So kind of dive into that a little bit, sustainability versus regeneration, and how you're really just trying to mimic the prairie, mimic Mother Nature, and mimic an ecosystem.
That's correct. If you look at the current model so many farmers and ranchers use, it's one of, well, I produce so much yield, so many bushels of grain, so many pounds of beef, I need to put those nutrients back in, what I took out. They're just trying to sustain things. But what most producers don't realize is we've been on a long, slow decline of degraded health of the ecosystem, degraded soil health. I'll just give you some examples from back in North Dakota where I'm at. North Dakota State University did some tests back in 1960, and they found there was 34 inches of topsoil on this particular piece of land, cropland, that they were looking at. They went back 50 years later and tested that land again, and it was down to 14 inches of topsoil. So we had degraded the resource, but it happens very slowly over time. And you mentioned my infiltration rates before. When my wife and I bought the farm in 1991, I was fortunate that we did some baseline soils data, and we could only infiltrate a half of an inch of rainfall per hour. And I hear that as I travel around the North America speaking so often, well, Gabe, you don't understand. This is what I got. And that's the mentality of farming and ranching today. This is what I have. This is what my resource is. But we don't realize as farmers and ranchers that we can change that. And I tell people, you know, no matter what you buy, whether it be a car or a wash machine, you get an owner's manual with it. But nobody ever gave farmers and ranchers an owner's manual for the soil. Mm-hmm. And we don't understand how these ecosystems function. And that if we follow nature's five principles, we can regenerate those ecosystems and bring our operations back to ones that are healthy, profitable, and produce nutrient-dense food.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go through those five. I wrote down a few notes here I wanted to buzz through real fast because, again, resonated exactly with how we see the body. At one point in the book, you say, nobody's an expert. Nature always gets the last laugh. And I say that all the time. It doesn't matter if you're talking about doctors from Harvard or John Hopkins or Mayo or wherever. God's design of this body is so amazing. We can observe it. We can watch it. We can try to figure it out. But really, you've got to let it just do what it was designed to do when you give it the right inputs. And you also mentioned deprogramming everything you ever learned in conventional ag in order to allow yourself an open mind to go this different direction. It's the same thing in medicine. And then whole system management versus compartmentalization. I'm looking at the whole system together from the animals, wildlife animals, and domesticated animals, all the different grasses and legumes and just the whole thing. You've got to do it all. So go through those five, if you don't mind. We can hit them right in order, or if you want to dive into one, feel free to do that. But what are those five topics principles you mentioned?
Yeah.
Principles, yeah.
Yes. So I'll just go through it in the way kind of that I learned about these five principles in order to illustrate to the listening audience how they can be applied in today's production agriculture. So the first principle is least amount of mechanical and chemical disturbance possible. Where in nature do you find tillage? Obviously, after a typhoon or a hurricane, tornado, you might have some, but there's really very little, there's no mechanical tillage going on. The only other tillage is by earthworms, etc. Well, back in 1993, 94, I bought that first no-till drill, so that I eliminated the tillage. Second principle is armor on the soil surface. And by that, I mean there's always residue covering the soil. And if you go into native ecosystems, you don't see bare soil. If there's bare soil, there's going to be weeds trying to grow there. They're really forbs, but people think of them as weeds. Nature is trying to armor or puts, it's no different than our skin, trying to cover the soil, because we need that armor on the soil surface in order to prevent wind erosion, water erosion, and to prevent water from evaporating. So when I went through those years of hail, I got that biomass that was growing at the time was pounded down onto the soil surface, and that armored the soil. That protected it. The third principle is diversity. And, you know, you can drive for hundreds of miles through the Corn Belt. You only see corn and soybeans being produced. You can drive for hundreds of miles in the Pacific Northwest and only see wheat. I know down in Texas, Oklahoma, you're seeing wheat and cotton. Very little diversity, but walk into a native prairie ecosystem. And I use this as an example. My son, for 5 years, taught rangeland management at the local community college, and he brought his students out into one of our perennial pastures, and in 2 hours, they collected over 140 different species of grasses, forbs, and legumes. Nature is much more collaborative than it is competitive. And just like our bodies need a balanced diet in order for us to be healthy, the soil needs a balanced diet also. So on my operation, I grow a myriad of different cash crops, everything from spring wheat, oats, barley, corn, sunflowers, alfalfa, peas, sunflowers, along with a wide variety of cover crops. I'm trying to feed the soil a diverse diet. The fourth principle is living root in the soil as long as possible throughout the year. Up where I'm at in North Dakota, you know, in the spring of the year, we'll still have snow on the ground, yet there's crocuses poking through the snow. Nature wants that living root, and there's a living root in the ground up until the time we get deep snow again. Nature wants to keep the soil covered in a living root, and the reason for that is it's because plant and soil are one. We need plants in order to pull CO2 out of the atmosphere through photosynthesis. It takes that carbon and those compounds and pumps it into the soil to feed biology, and that is the start of the nutrient cycle. That's what drives the healthy soil. And then the fifth principle is animal-insect integration. You know, nature does not operate without animals and insects. Yet, look what we've done. We've taken the animals off the landscape and put them in feedlots or in confinement. These ecosystems evolved over eons of time with animals grazing plants, then moving on, and the insects and the birds that come. That's part of a healthy soil ecosystem. So those five principles, I tell people, I am 100% confident that I can take these five principles, and if I apply them anywhere in the world where there's production agriculture on land, I can, over time, bring back and regenerate these ecosystems to a healthy state.
And when you do that, water infiltration rates improve, organic matter content in the soil improves, top soil levels improve, nutrient content of the plant, and if it's obviously if it's a crop we're going to eat, that's great. But even if it's not, if you have a nutrient dense plant, it's going to be a healthier plant, resist pests, and produce more. And you talk about profit per acre instead of pounds per acre is what your goal is. So profits go up. So it's a win-win-win. You're going to have better soil. Your water usage is better, and you're going to have more money in the bank. So you say anywhere in the world. I know one of the first things people around here might say is, well, how much rainfall do you get? So what's your average rainfall up there on your place?
Yeah, in North Dakota, Bismarck, North Dakota, and our ranch is located adjacent to the city of Bismarck. So if I use the National Weather Service there in Bismarck, we get approximately 10 to 11 inches of rainfall per year, and then we get another 5 to 6 inches of moisture from the approximately 50 plus inches of snow we get. So a total of around 16 inches of total moisture per year.
Very similar.
Which is not a whole lot different than in West Texas.
Right. Talk a little bit, because this fascinated me, on the roots, the living root, the nature always wants that living root. When you talk about the plant is excreting things through the root that feed the bugs, and in turn the bugs, the bacteria and fungi in the soil, excrete things to the plant. It's this perfect relationship. So therefore, if you disrupt the bugs, and if you put synthetic fertilizer, so explain that whole root relationship and the way there's an exchange of nutrition there.
Sure, that's the start of the nutrient cycle. So, as I said, plants take in CO2 out of the atmosphere. Through photosynthesis, they produce these sugars, amino acids, and all these carbon compounds. Now, a plant uses a part of that for growth, but how it gets the nutrients it needs, it pumps part of those compounds out through the root tip into the soil. And when it does that, biology comes, bacteria come to start eating those compounds, and I'm simplifying this, but then what happens is protozoa come and eat the bacteria. When they do, they excrete excess nutrients. Those nutrients are readily available to the plant. And it's a beautiful process because people often think, well, in agriculture, we have to add all these. People think of the soil as a chemistry step. We got to add nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium. No, as you said in the beginning, there's 32,000 tons of atmospheric nitrogen above every acre of land. It's up to the plant feeding biology, and then a lot of plants have the ability through rhizobia, which is nitrogen-fixing bacteria, to take that nitrogen out of the atmosphere and make it available to plants. Same goes phosphorus and potassium. People always said, Gabe, you're going to run out of those nutrients. No, I won't. Our soils in North America have an ample amount of phosphorus, potassium, and all these micronutrients. It's just that we no longer have the biology in the soils to make those nutrients available to the plant.
And at one point you talk about how a plant can send out a chemical messenger is how I took it. When it needs a certain nutrient, say phosphorus, it can send out this specific signal that will attract a specific bacteria that can provide that specific nutrient. It's like it's custom ordering, hey, I need some of this fertilizer. You bacteria that can provide that, you come over here and give it to me more than your neighbor who's not going to provide that. But this specific signaling, and then also on top of that, when you have multi-species, a diverse species, even up to 8, 9, 10, or 12, I think you said different species on a cover crop. When you're just planting a cover crop, when you have that many different kinds of roots in the ground, each requesting different bugs to come bring different nutrients, it would just, I envision this amazing smorgasbord of bacteria running around down there coming to bring that plant what it needed. It was amazing.
You're exactly right. And then not only that, plants have the ability to sense, if they're in diverse ecosystems, they have the ability to sense, well, my neighbor here sent out root exudates to attract biology to say, for instance, bring phosphorus. I can grab some of that from them. I'm going to send out root exudates to attract biology to bring me, let's say, copper, for instance. So these plants have the ability to communicate, and then there's mycorrhizal fungi in the soil, and mycorrhizal fungi are kind of like the streets and the avenues of the soil. They have the ability to move these nutrients, including water, throughout the soil profile. And so what we're really doing, if we focus on a healthy soil ecosystem, we're building resilience. That makes our operations much more resilient in terms of drought, in terms of high temperature, in terms of swings in nutrient availability. You build resiliency into your operation if you focus on these five principles.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, Gabe, and then we'll come back and talk some more. I want to talk more about the fungi and how they secrete this substance like glue that will bring the soil particles together and make it more like a chocolate cake consistency with lots of pores where the water can infiltrate and the microbes, the bacteria, live on the water droplets. Fascinating topic there, and we'll get into other stuff too. One of which I want to talk about how local guys maybe could get into this, and you mentioned, I think is in one of your testimonials, the guys mentioned that peer pressure is the number one thing keeping, or the hardest challenge for these young farmers or even old farmers to move this direction. So we'll get into some of the practical stuff too of how guys down here could and gals down here could do some of this. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, Gabe, stay with us. Don't hang up. We'll be back with Dr. Ben Edwards and You're the Cure right after this. We're back with you this morning here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards and You're the Cure. Outside 38 degrees right now, headed for a warm 74 degrees, 40 tonight, then a high tomorrow at 48 degrees and low of 24. Got a great guest. We're not going to take up any longer, but Dr. Edwards, man, I could listen to him talk all day long. He's got some good stuff.
Well, me too. We're happy to have Gabe Brown with us. If y'all are just joining us, Gabe wrote a book called Dirt to Soil. Gabe Brown's a farmer from North Dakota, and now he goes around the world, I think, definitely around the country, teaching about how to foster life in the soil. And Gabe talks in the book about fostering life is the key to turning dirt to soil. You've got to have the microbes, you've got to have biology into the soil. And we were just talking about how the plant can excrete chemicals. It tells the bacteria to come and give the plant the nutrients it needs. One thing we didn't talk about though, when you put synthetics in, when you put these various fertilizers in, then the plant doesn't have to secrete those chemicals to request the bacteria to come and give it what it needs, because it was just given basically quote unquote free food. So that disrupts some of that biology. So we'll have Gabe speak to that, but also speak to the fungi and how the fungi secrete a substance that allows the dirt to congeal in a certain manner that allows water to be held in the dirt. So, Gabe, can you continue on with where we were with the fungi and the bacteria with water infiltration, but also with what happens when you put synthetics and when you till? I think the till disrupts the fungi, but educate us on those two things.
Sure, and realize I am not a scientist. I'm a farmer and rancher. But in order to be a profitable farmer and rancher, I had to learn how soil ecosystems function. And one of the things, I was applying synthetic fertilizer like most farmers and ranchers do. Well, you're exactly right. What happens when synthetics are applied, plants then no longer have to send out and pump those root exudates into the soil to attract biology in order for the nutrient cycle to appear. Instead, actually, what happens, plants become very lazy. A lot of those nutrients then are leached into the soil profile, and realize what happens in the soil. Everything has carbon to nitrogen ratios. Soil is made up of approximately 11 parts carbon, 1 part of nitrogen. Well, if you put large amounts of nitrogen into the soil, the biology will consume that nitrogen, but then it needs carbon to balance itself. Well, where does it find the carbon? Well, if you have some residue left on the soil, it's going to eat that. If you have some organic matter in the soil, it's going to eat that. But then it's actually going to go into all these little tiny soil aggregates, these little soil particles, and it's going to eat the carbon out of there. Once it does, your soils become very hard, and they're not able to infiltrate water. And, you know, it's not uncommon for me to drive anywhere in North America and see, even after a half inch or an inch of rainfall, for there to be water on the soil surface. Well, I can tell what's happened. Those soils are no longer well aggregated. So how do we get our soils well aggregated? And by that I mean, think of it like marbles in a jar. If we have all these marbles in a jar and you pour water in there, water's going to flow around those marbles in those spaces between the marbles and down to the bottom, and then it'll fill up. Well, it's the same with our soil. And what's happened, because we've destroyed those soil aggregates, we can no longer infiltrate water. Okay, so a soil aggregate will only last approximately 4 weeks. Then new ones need to be formed. Well, what does a soil aggregate need to be formed? It needs a substance called glomalin. And glomalin is a sticky substance that's secreted by mycorrhizal fungi. It combines with compounds from the soil biology, the bacteria and the protozoan, the nematodes, and that's the sticky substance that starts binding the salt, silt, and clays, and all soil has salt, silt, and clay in it, starts binding that together to form an aggregate. So as farmers and ranchers, we just need to think of it, okay, what do I need to do to make healthy soil so these biology and the mycorrhizal fungi can build this soil structure? Once we do that, it's not uncommon over time for soils with very poor infiltration to become well-aggregated soils full of porosity, and then the biology lives in and on thin films of water in those pore spaces. And most producers don't realize that our soils are actually subaquatic ecosystems. It depends on water, but that water then fills those pore spaces. That's the home for biology. And then as we build up organic matter in our soil, that is where we're able to store water. And the more organic matter you build up in the soil, the more you're going to be able to store. Think of it as increase in your storage bucket, increase your water holding capacity. That allows us to be resilient to drought. And in areas such as West Texas, I know that's just critical to be able to store water as long as possible.
Right. And I'm just thinking about inputs from these irrigations, wells pumping all the time. That's just cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And then the fertilizers you got to put on there. And we won't, I guess, we might have time to get into pesticides and herbicides and all that. But just right there, if you've got soil biology working for you, you're holding on to more water. So even if you are having to irrigate some, it'll cut it way down, maybe to none. And then your inputs on fertilizer, your nitrogen's right there in the air above it, and the phosphorus and potassium in the soil, if you got the right bugs growing and enough of them to liberate that right back to the plant. It's just amazing how it'll cut down on those inputs, I would imagine.
That's exactly right. And, you know, water is becoming just a limiting factor in many environments. And I was just out in California 10 days ago talking out there, and they were talking how due to urban growth, much of the water that was allocated for agriculture is going to the cities. Well, we as farmers and ranchers have to realize that. Water is becoming more and more of a scarce, I don't want to call it a commodity, but it's a scarce item that we have to focus on. How can I make our operations even more resilient to these limiting water factors?
Yeah. Resilience is key. To be able to turn a profit, be able to have your farm, your land in a form that you can pass it down to the next generation, and not put a stress on those kids and grandkids. Resiliency is going to be key. I do want to touch on briefly two more topics before the end of the show in about 15 minutes, but one is going to be about how folks can get into this. But before we do that, we can't ignore the cattlemen. There's plenty of cowmen around. And fascinating to me, 800,000 pounds per acre stock density rate. Just incredible, the number of cows per acre you can put on. So let's spend a few minutes talking on the cow side of things, how you've evolved over the years and where you're at now with these high stock density rates, and how does that even work?
Sure, and realize that our operation, livestock, is our main source of income off our ranch. We have about 1,000 head of beef cattle. We run some ewes and grass-finished lambs. We have pastured hogs. We have 1,400 land hens out on pasture.
Diversity.
And broilers out on pasture. Yep. And years ago, when I first started, we had the cattle in the corral all winter feeding them hay, and then we'd move them out to the pastures, and we did what was called set stocking. We just put so many cow-calf pairs on so much pasture for the entire growing season. But as my mind started to evolve and I started to learn and study how ecosystems function, think of it this way. Just imagine how the bison were centuries ago. The bison would move across the plains in large herds, and they would eat an area, trample a lot, and they'd defecate on it, and then the wolves, the predators, would keep them moving. And that then, because they were kept moving, would allow where they had been to recover. Those plants would recover and cycle the nutrients there and grow. And then it may be a year or more, depending on the area, before those bison had come back and graze again. And plus you had all these other species, the deer and the elk and rabbits and grasshoppers and everything else. Well, I noticed that on my native prairies, when I was set stocking, what would happen? The cattle would come, they'd eat the plant they like. Well, if there's adequate moisture, that plant will start to regrow in about 3 days. What had happened? As soon as it got up a few inches, the cattle would come and eat it again. Well, you can only do that so many times, and then those root reserves from that plant get weak and that plant dies. Then pretty soon, the quote-unquote invasives or the less desirable species take over. And I was seeing that on my own operation. So I knew I had to start moving my cattle. Now, there's no right or wrong here. Every operation's a little different. But I do know one thing. If we allow those plants time to recover after being grazed, we're going to have a much healthier ecosystem. So now my ranch has evolved to the point today we're moving our livestock once a day during the growing season. And that might seem like a lot of work, but it's the most enjoyable part of our day, and it's really very easy with today's fencing technology. Then we do not come back and graze that paddock, that pasture again for at least another 12 to 15 months. But when we do graze it, we bring on these large quantities, like 800,000 pounds of live weight per acre in some instances, not always. You know, we'll vary stocking rates too, just like there wasn't the same number of bison on the same acre for the same amount of time each year. So we're allowing rest, recovery, we're allowing the plants to grow, diversity has come back, and that's how come we can have up to, you know, I mentioned 140 different species of grasses, forbs, and legumes in a paddock.
Yeah. Well, I just want to encourage ranchers to look into that and get Gabe's book for sure. You talk about some, I think these were mostly younger farmers that were sort of getting into this, or maybe there were some interns that were working with you or something, but you had some testimonials, or I'm not sure if this quote came from a testimony or just a talk you were given, but peer pressure is the biggest obstacle to regenerative ag. And then also you talk about, I think at a conference, you asked how many people made a profit in corn this year. Of all these farmers in the group, one of them raises her hand, one in the whole room. And then you said, how many of you are going to plan to plant corn again next year? Every single hand went up.
Yeah, that was actually a room of over 500 producers.
Yeah.
And I started my presentation that way, and I did mean this to be rude, but I wanted to grab their attention. I said, in my mind, that's the definition of stupidity. We're doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Right.
We have to get away from that type of mentality. And unfortunately, in today's production model, with the way the current farm programs are, that's what producers are driven down. They're doing the same thing over and over and waiting for the government to subsidize and keep them in business. You know, there's no other business that would operate that way. And as a farmer and rancher, we have businesses, and we have to take that into our own hands. And I tell people that, you know, we have 17 enterprises on my operation, different ones. We will make a profit at every one of them this year, and we accept no government subsidies of any kind. And the reason is that I'm not going to produce something if I can't make a profit at it. And then I'm certainly not going to sell it for below my cost of production.
Well, that's kind of common sense, but this old mindset, and I'm not getting on to farmers. I've got families full of farmers, and half my patients are farmers. And I'm coming out of the same system and a mindset in medicine. It's the exact same thing. This old way of doing medicine, where we have this old way of thinking. Everything's compartmentalized. You have a headache, you go to the neurologist. You have chest pain, you go to the cardiologist. You have joint pain, you go to the orthopedic. Everything's compartmentalized. Well, no, it's all inflammation. Well, inflammation's all coming from these same root sources, and it's lack of nutrients, basically, or an excess of toxins. in us. So it's this whole mindset shift that has to change both in medicine and in ag, both, to produce better results. And both of the conventional mindsets right now are putting us on a path of unsustainability. I mean, look at healthcare. Everyone's worried about it going bankrupt, or it is bankrupting us. We've got to get off that path in medicine. We've got to get off of it in ag, too. So, Gabe, spend just a little bit of time here at the end talking about maybe some of the primary obstacles you see or you hear. Maybe they're not real obstacles, but people think they are. Farmers thinking about making this switch. What are the number one hesitations? How do you overcome those? Or what's a good way for people to get into this? I know you have a limited number of internship spots, but just give some advice for some farmers that maybe this resonates with them, but it's really hard to break out of that old way of doing things, especially when everybody at the coffee shop and the cotton gin is looking at you like you're a little crazy. Speak to how someone could transition into this.
Well, that's a great question. And I encourage everyone to start and continue to learn. You know, one of the things that's gotten me to where I am today is I have an insatiable appetite to learn. And I'm always seeking out other farmers, other ranchers, scientists, anybody who can help me further my learning as to a different method. And I tell people, Gabe Brown is really not that intelligent. I'm just very good at looking at what other people are doing and then stealing bits and pieces of them that I can conform and use on my farm or ranch. And there's many groups out there and agencies that are doing very, very good things to educate people in regenerative agriculture. I'll put a plug out there for another book. There's a book out there called A Soil Owner's Manual by John Sticca. It's a small book that explains the five principles of soil health in depth, and it's a very good way to get producers looking at these principles and how to adapt them. The other thing is I'm part of a business called Understanding Ag and Soil Health Consultants. And we actually do three-day intensive trainings on these principles all around the country. And we just finished one in Missouri this past week. And the producers that go to our trainings will tell you the first year, well, I'll give you this example. We had one producer in North Carolina last year that the first year he was able to cut his input costs by $180,000 in 1 year. I had another producer who took his input just his fertilizer cost from over $1.5 million, and in 6 years he dropped it to $127,000 from over $1.5 million. There's tremendous savings to be earned if you start following those principles. The other thing I really encourage producers to realize that what we're really doing is producing health. You know, we have to start marketing it as health and try and educate your consumers that they can dictate production models by their buying dollars. Encourage your friends and neighbors to start doing that. Take their health into their own hands and then buy accordingly. Buy from people who are using regenerative practices.
Yeah. Well, in fact, just last night, my wife got an email from a farmer's wife, a friend of ours here in the Lubbock area. He's an organic cotton farmer, and the list she sent him or sent to my wife was a list of all the companies that use this cotton. So when we buy our next pair of underwear or pillowcase or whatever it is, we're going to specifically buy from those companies. So because we are educated and we want to support these farmers who are growing a more quality product, and specifically with food crops, which I know we don't grow a lot of that around here, but we could grow more and more. And that's the thing I want to encourage farmers too, is I don't think there's a limit just because we're in West Texas and we get this much rain or this much heat or this much hail or whatever the thing is. When you have a resilient piece of land because you've regenerated it, I think there's a whole lot more possibility of what you could produce.
There is. That's very well said.
Well, Gabe Brown, Dirt to Soil, is One Family's Journey into Regenerative Agriculture. It's a great book.
Good stuff.
Gabe just really tells his story, talks about his family. We didn't mention this, but Gabe also gets into how do you pass this on to the next generation. He talks about how he and his wife had to, how they had to acquire farmland from their folks, but then how he thought there's maybe a better way to do it and how to pass that on to his son. So it's just a great family story, a testimony again to how God really had to open the door and push Gabe through these doors initially there at the beginning.
That's right.
And I just want to encourage farmers and ranchers out there that it's just a good book. So even if you don't think you can do a lot of this, just you can, but read the book because it's a great story. I really liked also, I'll just mention this, you mentioned, and I wanted to ask you on the show today, I almost forgot, Buffalo Bird Lady, I think you said, a book from the 1800s maybe, and there were 90 varieties of corn or something like that, and now we have like two. We've lost the variety, but that was what was the name of that book?
Yeah, Buffalo Bird Woman's Garden, and it was about a native American who was what she grew in her garden there on the northern plains. And it was just fascinating because people often don't think of it, but they were growing tobacco up there and all these different crops. So I really like how you're encouraging farmers to try other things.
Yeah. Well, we need that from my standpoint as a physician, again, who's relying on the body to fix itself. We've got to have access to these nutrient dense. This is way beyond organic. It's got to be nutrient dense food, and that can only come from a soil that has life in it and that's been regenerated. So even beyond just no-till, which no-till is awesome, but even let's move beyond that. Where we can start producing these nutrient-dense foods. So thank you very much, Gabe Brown. If you're ever down in the Lubbock, Texas area, be sure to look us up.
How can we get his book?
Gabe, what's the best way to find you or find your book? Do you have a website or Facebook?
Yes, you can look at brownsranch.us or soilhealthconsultants.com. But all you really have to do is Google my name. It seems... as I go out and speak at conferences, there's many people who post those YouTube videos on the internet.
Well, thank you, Gabe, for being obedient, doing what God made you to do, and it's benefiting a lot of people, and I know you do a lot of speaking engagements, and we sure appreciate you being on ours today.
It's good stuff. Good stuff.
We'll get folks educated out here and start turning this dirt to soil here in West Texas.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
All right. Well,
have a blessed day.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Jim.
That's good stuff. Dr. Ben Edwards and you, The Cure. Get a hold of him at 1-855-56-VERITAS. It's always good information. We enjoy getting set in with you every once in a while, Doctor.
And well, thank you.
Yes, sir.
And a quick note, veritasmedical.com, we do archive these shows. So if you're listening and you've got family, friends, or whoever that you think needs to hear this, just go to the website, veritasmedical.com, and it'll be archived there.
Fantastic, fantastic. We'll see you back next Monday. Good Lord willing.